This is the Faith Debate, a theological roundtable gab fest with the Mixmaster as the master of ceremonies and the notorious Triple B, the big bridge builder. Can we build it? Yes, we can. The Faith Debate is a free-for-all forum.
Hoo-ah!
Where faith community leaders wrestle over the truth.
Yabba-dabba-doo.
In less than 30 minutes, learn more about what really matters than others learn in a month.
Ooh, how convenient.
Are you ready for a clash of ideas? Are you ready for the sound of freedom?
Let's get ready to rumble!
Let's get ready to rumble.
Ah, yeah!
In this corner, weighing in with a Master of Divinity from Reformed Theological Seminary, the Faith Debate Master of Ceremonies, Troy Skinner.
You got a moron here, is that it?
And in this corner, weighing in as a pastor, teacher, and founder of Bridges, connecting needs and resources in the local community,
ooh, mama,
the notorious Big Bridge Builder, John Switzer.
Now, I'm just getting warmed up.
Yeah, we've got Tony Campbell back for another go-round, and this time John Switzer, the Big Bridge Builder, has joined into the conversation.
So what are you, the little
I'm the mix master.
The mix master.
That's right.
You're going to call me big, I'm going to call you little.
So John Switzer has started he's well underway now with his new initiative, Bridges.
Yeah,
it's going well.
Yeah, it's going
changing
well.
The face of Frederick as we speak.
Yeah, trying to.
Yeah, awesome.
I mean, there's a lot of good stuff in Frederick, without a doubt. And so, stepping into some of these gaps it's an exciting place to be because there's a lot of good people that are, ready to step in there with you and be a part of the whole program.
Well, cool.
Had some great conversations today about it.
On the panel this week, again, Dr. Tony Campbell. He is running for United States Senate in the state of Maryland as a Republican.
Nice.
As a Republican.
The man is crazy. So, we've talked.
I don't know Hogan. Hogan's been doing pretty well, right?
I mean,
he's looking strong.
I'm just managing expectations.
Second most popular governor in the country, right?
Who?
Second most.
Who's number one?
I don't know. Some guy I don't know.
Doesn't matter. He's not in Maryland.
Who cares?
It's not Maryland.
So anyway, I kind of almost unfairly spent some time the first couple of shows I did with Dr. Campbell saying, what happens if you don't win? But let's talk right now about, what happens when you win?
Yeah.
We always focus on the president's first 100 days. So what's Tony Campbell's first 100 days going to look like as a United States senator? What are the things you'll be pushing hardest on?
Probably making people mad. Just having the conversations that we were talking about earlier, sanctity for life being a big one, school choice being another one. I really believe that, school choice is the civil rights issue, the discrimination issue that a lot of folks are faced with,
Is there anybody in the African American community that disagrees with you about that?
No, but the question is, how do we go about doing it?
Sure.
And what people are used to having as opposed to, a new way of thinking about things. Mentioned the Troy earlier. I mean, I'm on the board of a charter school in Baltimore City.
And nice.
When kids get to our school in sixth grade, they're two of the three grade levels behind. And when they leave in eighth grade, they're at or above grade level in reading and math.
That's so exciting.
And it's not about the kids.
But does that make you a threat to the system at all?
I think it... Well, the system partly funds the charter school. So one thing that I hope that in the governor's second term, and he's been pushing this at least a couple years, is expansion of charter schools.
Yeah.
But again, it's not necessarily about what is right and wrong. It's about having the political will to push it and to make that happen.
Totally.
Yeah.
And is there enough of that political will here in Maryland from what you can tell?
I think in Hogan's second term, you're going to see a lot of things that didn't happen in his first term.
So how do you encourage that?
Interesting.
How do you encourage that from, the federal side? You're trying to affect a state change. So is that just going to be trying to steer dollars to Maryland to help it happen for federal dollars? Or, what's that look like?
Well, I think that the question – and I know that Betsy DeVos is looking at discipline issues and looking at expanding, kind of the role of charters at the national level. Now, this, again, goes back to what is the proper role of government. I don't think the national government should be in that part of education to begin with. And what you were saying earlier is that if we even start having that conversation as far as what's the role of the national government, then we maybe already lost the battle because we're dealing with them on their terms instead of the correct terms.
Our job would be to get the government out of it.
Is to get the national government out of on that process.
Wow, so you'll be advocating the defunding of the federal education budget.
Well,
that's why I think is kind of,
and she's already doing it, but I think that,
which is why she's hated.
There are things that the national government should be responsible for as far as education, and one of them, and the main thing being security, infrastructure, hardening our schools, making sure that there are, that these incidents that happen are, it's a lot harder for someone to enter in our schools and to do damage. That's a role that the national government should play. Because if you go to Capitol Hill and walk into any of these House and Senate office buildings, you have to go through a metal detector, you have to go through armed guards, and in our schools, you can make up some story and walk into just about any public school.
So why wouldn't policing our schools be a state issue? Why not have state police responsible for that, as opposed to, you're saying, the federal government?
Well, I'm saying, if they're going to fund anything, they should help fund infrastructure, meaning the schools, the physical security of the schools, not necessarily.
So the point is, if they do it,
right, that's what they should be responsible for.
Spend the money
for
in that direction, releasing the schools to have the freedom to state by state figure out what's best for them.
Well, the national government should not have any role in teacher standards or curricular management.
Yeah, that was the problem we all were trying to figure out with Bush. You know, he's pushing a No Child Left Behind.
Yep.
But it meant he was buying into the federal government playing a role. And that's where most of the fiasco was the central government trying to
establish. It's incredibly complicated, because what we have right now is socialized education at the primary grade levels anyway. And they're talking about trying to do it all the way through college as well. You know, free education, quote unquote, free education, the most expensive free education you'll ever get.
So by socialized, what do you mean by socialized education?
It's one size fits all, the government's in control. I mean, we have the opt-outs.
Just saying what we call the public school system is socialized education.
That's since
we've had public schools,
that's the
really
definition.
Socialized education.
Yeah, that's the definition I'm using anyway.
Okay.
And
I've just never heard it like quite said that way, and so
yeah, I can see why. I can get kind of militant about the whole school thing.
Okay.
And so, and I'm also, I believe that, you know, free markets lead to flourishing, because people are called to then call upon their own talents and gifts that God's given them, and people end up finding their niche and they find their purpose, and the human spirit is enlivened and the communities are enlivened around that. And so how we go from a socialized model, now that you understand what I mean by that, hope that makes some sense, to a pure free market model.
Yeah,
maybe the charter school
is like a
transition.
I don't think you're going
to
have a pure free market model.
Right, so what we end up with, here's my point, here's my concern. So we end up with a middle ground, which is like, you know, the government kind of helping to fund some of the schools, which begins to feel an awful lot like crony capitalism, where the government's putting the finger on the scales of certain schools because they're giving funding to those schools and the other schools aren't getting that funding, and they're not playing on financially on equal terms.
Yeah, well, I think what I would want as a parent is to have the choice to send my kid to whatever school I want that kid to go to.
Whether you're a wealthy parent or not, if you're a poor parent, you have no choice right now.
Right. That's what I would want.
And are you, Troy, saying that a pure capitalist system would be like a voucher system, just a straight voucher system for everybody? Like, would you call that a pure capitalistic system? Is that what you're – or free market system? You're saying
That's still not free market, but at least you have the choice of sending your kid where you want them to go. So
that's
not free market? No, it's not free market, because you still have taxpayers funding their vouchers.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah,
but the question is, what is the outcome of the education that your child is getting for the money that the taxpayers are spending? Because right now it's terrible.
Well, it does mean that they give me my money back, because that means I get to send my kid to the school that I feel is best fit for us as a family.
We have,
but right now there's no choice like that.
Half or a little more than half of the Frederick County budget, for example, goes to the school system.
67 cents out of every dollar
So now it's 2/3
spend in taxes.
So it's grown, I guess, since I moved here.
Right. Well, when I ran for Board of Ed, that's what it was.
Okay.
I don't think it shifted.
All right. So we're talking about a huge amount of money.
Yeah.
So just imagine I get to keep all that money. You get to keep all that money. Everybody who's a property owner in Frederick County gets to keep all that money.
Well, you won't be able to keep all that money.
No, all that school money.
Okay.
Right, in this idealized fantasy world, right?
Meaning that instead of spending it on school, I could spend it on things I wanted to spend it on?
We're talking about $500 million or something like that, right? That $500 million would
probably
then
more
be
than.
I mean, if we got five kids, you're talking about more than that. You know, you only had two, so you get less.
But I'm saying there's all this money that's freed up so that, because how would you fund a pure free market system? Well, if you free up over $500 million, yeah, there's a lot of money available. And you could set up programs like yours, Bridges. We could have a Bridges to a Better Future and have a whole school thing that's privately funded through donations, like a crowdfunding kind of an idea. And that's more of a free market model. And the government doesn't stick its nose in and then dictate, you know, what the valedictorians can say in their speeches and who can pray in what way at sporting events. Because if I don't want my kid to go to a school that prays Christian prayers at a football game, I won't send him to that school. I'll send him to this other school. And I'll have all these options. It'll be myriad. And that would be – that's in more of an – I understand it's fantasy world. It's not going to happen. But my concern – I mentioned this with the pro-life and these other issues. We take these half steps to kind of get closer to the ideal. But sometimes I get concerned that the half step is almost worse than where we are because crony capitalism is a disease. That's a real problem. So I don't know. How do we – I'm probably asking right, questions so, no answer to.
So your choice is socialism or crony capitalism?
Well, unless we – unless we can figure out a way, unless we can figure out a way to incentivize to go boom all the way, but what's the path to that?
Right.
I mean, you mentioned earlier how when you made a decision to run for Senate, you had to sit down and say, okay, I can only do this if I can see some sort of legitimate path to victory. It doesn't mean I'm going to win, but I can see a path.
Yeah.
And I'm going to follow that path, and hopefully I win. What's the path to a free market system education for the? For any, just in Frederick, let's keep it simple. Just for Frederick, how could Frederick do it? There's no path, is there?
Well, I mean, there's a path that exists.
That's such
the question
a depressing
is the question is the political will to make it happen. I mean, you change the county charter. You reallocate the money that's being spent for public schools. You do something about the teachers' unions. I mean, those are the ways you do it. But the question is, if you're the county executive, you want to win another 4 years as county executive.
Okay,
or if you're the governor, if you want to win Frederick County by a decent margin, you're not going to step into that hornet's nest.
Right, yeah, it's a third rail. Right.
So would you mind if I took the discussion a slightly different direction, still dealing with school choice, but
– it's a free market. You can – free exchange of ideas.
A free exchange of ideas, yeah. So I can offend at will. if people could choose what schools they wanted to send their kids to, I think that if you're – of a Jewish background, you have a little bit of a concern that maybe people are going to send their kids to Christian schools and you're going to end up being, just a part of a secular school or maybe a Jewish school, meaning that you won't be in the Christian majority. And over the last two millennia, is it millennia?
Millennia.
Is that the word?
Yeah,
after millennia. The last two millennia, the Jewish community, when it was not integrated well into the Christian community, the result tended to be that there were, you know, like these major moments of, you know, just annihilating whole groups of Jewish people. And then the next question is, would white people and African Americans, which oftentimes can seem to be culturally in different places, would they choose to just go with their own culture, you know, or would they choose to, you know, to go together? Like are there dangers of that kind of thing happening that they call it the Balkanization of the school system?
Yeah. I mean,
and is that bad if that were to happen? Because I think it's likely that people would make choices for things that fit them most comfortably. And oftentimes that's a cultural reality, you know?
Yeah,
you know,
I think they're,
that you're culturally connected to.
I think there's something to be said for that. I'll come at this from both angles. One is the Balkanization that happens because of choice happens in our churches.
Exactly.
And so,
I'd like to go there.
I mean, you
as
could,
we talk, and you know, but let me
you can go finish. To you know, even today, most of the churches that you go into, they are predominantly one race or another.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of – we tend to go where we feel comfortable.
Though there's a whole number of churches and pastors that I even know here in Frederick that are intentionally
– yes, and the churches that do that, they're intentionally
do that. In an integrated way.
Yes.
But it begs the question, what's better, you know, that we all become one culture or that we allow the different groups to celebrate their own culture in ways that can't be celebrated when you're trying so hard to be one culture.
Right.
You know, when you give, say, an African-American church freedom to just be African-American, there's an expression of that culture that deepens and enriches, you know, and same thing with Latin American, you know, churches, or same thing with, you know, Korean, or, you know, whatever, you know, they hang on to and deepen a certain cultural connection that I don't know is necessarily bad, but that people in the world tend to mock us for that, as somehow, you know, that, it shows how ununified we are and how maybe racist or, you know, unkind we are. Though, well, I don't think it's bad to go the other way either. I'm not saying that – I'm not advocating for one race only schools or churches. I'm just saying that I don't know that that's always bad. I'm okay with both.
I think that what I hope most thinking people would want is an equality of opportunity, not equality of outcome.
Okay.
So – you know,
and so how does that play into the organization?
If I choose to go to be intentional to worship at a mixed church or church of mixed people, then that's my choice as an individual, because that's where I feel like I want to.
In fact, you'll own it that much
more. Exactly.
You'll be a lot less offended by, you know, by not not feeling like you can be your own culture because you've chosen to be a joint culture.
Right.
Yeah,
and so
buy-in.
And so there's the opportunity is the choice to decide what, you know, what community of faith that I want to be a part of, and I think that that kind of translates to your school question, is that if, you know, my parents chose to, I mean, we were living in this place called Midland, which is west, you know, western Pennsylvania, and let's say 60% African American. My yeah. parents intentionally moved me and my two brothers to a white school, because that was the choice that they had before them to make that decision. Now, they could have made a different decision, but they were more interested in the choice of how that choice would affect impact their children.
Yeah, so would I think you call that quality of education was their choice would over
I think just
cultural.
It wasn't a culture, because, you know, we still went to the same church. We still went back to Midland three times a week to go to church. So we were still in that, and we were still in that part, in that community.
Yeah.
But as far as school choice, they made the choice to move 20 miles away.
Yeah.
You know, three episodes ago, I was asking you some personal questions about your family and background, upbringing and stuff, and I didn't get into, like, your present situation. Are you married? Do you have children?
I have children. I'm not married.
Okay. And are your children's school age?
One of them is. Will be.
Okay. And so what kind of education choices are you, you know, planning for your children?
I am scared, scared, scared.
Me too.
She's 5 years old. She's
yeah.
Bright kid. I mean, she's terrific. But I don't, you know, I want her to go to public school. I want her to have that experience.
Yeah.
But
right.
I want to put a fence around the kid, you know, 24/7. But so I have to make the choice to find a school that I'm comfortable with for her to be in.
Right.
And that's extremely difficult right now.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah.
So I really don't have a question for you, Troy. I mean, I don't have an answer for you. I'm struggling with that right now, because there's two or three schools that she can't go to. But I'm doing my due diligence as a parent to try to figure out which school she's going to go to kindergarten.
Yeah, the reality is that many school administrators, those that are in leadership in public schools, consistently send their kids to private schools. And so, you know, if it's not good enough for you, then, you know, why aren't you willing to, you know, provide the same choice for other people that you get?
I'm reminded of things I heard when I was growing up, and then things I heard a little bit later as I was a little older growing up, and things I now find myself. It seems like every half a generation, biblical generations are 40 years. I guess nowadays generations are like every 6 months. They keep renaming the generations. So I'm not sure what a generation is anymore. But, you know, let's say 20-ish years is maybe for a contemporary idea of a generation. And it seems like every 20 years, the new cycle of kids entering school comes up. And there's kind of this recurring theme, like, oh, boy, I'm glad my kids are done. I don't know what my kids are going to do. And then their kids have kids, and they're like, and they say the same thing. Oh, I'm glad I'm through with school now. I don't know what my kids are going to do. But I feel like this time it seems different. Doesn't it feel different?
Yeah, it's because you're 50 years old now. Sorry, did I say that on the air?
No, it could be because I'm older and wiser and better looking. might have something to do with all of that.
Your wife is.
But I think the circumstances have changed.
An anniversary.
Come on,
what was it?
Huh? 25th
the
wedding anniversary.
25th.
Yeah.
And you guys invited all your family and friends and had a ceremony.
Yeah, we did a recommitment ceremony.
That was beautiful.
Exchanged new vows.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. She was looking good. I'm not so sure about
you.
But
she took over the dance floor as she will always do if there's a dance floor present. So
that was cool.
Yeah, but that's kind of the gist of my raising that point.
Yeah.
Is it my imagination? I mean, you guys are all about the same age as me, so maybe we're all in this boat together. But or are things legitimately reaching like a tipping point where we have to be legitimately worried, not just a little bit concerned, and boy, I wish it wasn't so bad, but legitimately worried if you have a five-year-old entering the school system right now?
As I mentioned last time, my concern is the lack of sanctity for life and how that manifests itself in people's actions, you know. I don't, you know, it's one thing when I was, you know, I'm 52, so we're about the same, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So you get bullied. You can either decide to roll with it or you can decide to, fight.
Right. Oh, I like the way that you're tying this together.
And you settle it.
Yeah.
And then that was it.
Yeah.
Either you won or you lost. And if you won, you felt good. If you lost, you got your butt kicked. But that's where it ended.
Right, yeah.
Now, you feel bad about yourself because someone's picking on you. You may go home and get a weapon and come back to your school and just act on that.
And part of that is because the bullying isn't quite as direct as it was when we were kids. You were bullied directly to your face when we were going to school because there was no social media. Now you're being hit sideways with comments and things that go viral. You know, you did something stupid at school and the video goes viral or somebody calls your name and people keep sharing it and forwarding it to their other friends. And it's hard to address and confront the person who's the offender because it's kind of out there somewhere. You can't go punch him in the nose.
Well, but I think the difference, though, is that, like, when I was in that environment that I just told you about.
Are you advocating punching him in the nose?
Only if they're named John Schweitzer. Actually, if you can finish your thought in, like, 15 seconds.
But back in the day, I was called the N-word.
Sure.
You wouldn't – kids, they're so sensitive, they wouldn't even dream of doing that today.
Mm.
So – you know, I just think that we've just lost that, you know, the whole idea of life is sacred and we just don't do that. You just, there are lines you don't cross, and those lines are extremely blurred now.
I agree. Yeah. I'm in agreement with that.
The one in agreement is Jonathan Schweitzer. I'm Troy Skinner. The other voice you've been hearing is Tony Campbell. I'm going to use the N-word. He's nice. He's a very nice guy. Dr. Tony Campbell, running for U.S. Senate in the state of Maryland. As a Republican, the man's crazy. All right. Till next week. God bless.